You become overwhelmed. That wasn't what I was expecting. Are you saying my freakout was normal? For trauma therapy, yes. Although I would have preferred you didn't break my lamp. I'll pay for that, I said, failing to mask my smile. James waved off my offer. So what made you call me? There was no time for games. I was here for a reason, and time was ticking. Casey's pregnant. Other than a slight arch in his right eyebrow, he barely reacted to the news. And why would he? Women had babies every day. Why would this one be any different? James watched me with insightful eyes, causing me to shift uncomfortably in place. He was in his mid-50s, with a tall, lanky frame and floppy brown hair more suited for a Beatles cover band than a head shrink. He had this calming way about him that seemed able to pull things out of me I hadn't thought I'd ever reveal. Within days of our first session over a year ago, I was describing to him some of the worst memories of my life. Would that happen again? And more importantly, could he really read the signs of an impending explosion? My hands suddenly turned clammy as the need to spill my guts to him became stronger. Well, I suppose congratulations are in order. Although I hadn't meant to, my mouth morphed into a grimace. James didn't need to be a behavioral specialist to pick up on my nonverbal cues. Any old Joe on the street could have done it. I was just that transparent. James chose his words carefully. Perhaps I should have said, sorry. No, it's good. I mean, it's my kid, right? I'm happy. I looked up to the skies, as if the act of searching my brain for the correct feeling required a glance to the heavens. I stopped myself again. Was there a better word? Happy implied I was pleased with the news of my impending fatherhood, which, just by my hesitation alone, proved I wasn't. But not being excited about your own child when you're married to a wonderful woman who dreams of being a mother? That's shitty. Congratulations, kid. You've got an ungrateful asshole for a father. Have a nice life. Remembering I was still having a conversation with an actual person, I said, no, I'm happy. James studied me intently, the slightest of smiles registering on his face at my obvious indecision. I'm glad you're so happy. Thank you. I settled back into my seat, grinning. If I continued with this level of uncertainty, it would be a long night. You know, a baby's a big life changer. It's common to feel apprehensive even when you're excited about the new arrival. Pointing to him, I said, yes, that's what I meant to say. I wasn't sure why I was making light of the situation, because in a few minutes this room would be a somber death chamber, sucking the life out of all who entered. Thankfully, James was blissfully unaware of his looming fate. He gave me a courtesy smile before switching to his therapy face. It really was a genius expression. With one brow tipped upward, indicating interest, while the other drooped ever so slightly in order to convey concern, James had taken attentive apprehension to a whole new level. What about Casey's pregnancy is concerning you? The knot in my stomach instantly tightened. This was what I was here for. It was time to man up and face my issues. Catching his eye, I said, everything. Okay, can you narrow that down a bit? Everything is harder to work with. Dropping my gaze, I studied my boots, focusing on a muddy splotch on the right toe and wondering where I'd gotten it. But then, who cared? It was mud. Shaking the thought from my head, I walked over to the chair and sank down into it. James followed me over to the one opposite mine and took a seat as well. Looking up to meet his eye, I noticed James still staring keenly at me. Shit. That's what I was talking about. He had that way about him. He made me want to spill my soul. I could almost feel the truth traveling up through my throat, preparing for a dramatic exit. Hopefully the man was true to his word and would stop me this time before I went berserk on his power appliances. Before the wedding, I told Casey I didn't want kids. I said it was because I was afraid they'd be ashamed of me and that I didn't know how to explain to them what happened to me as a kid. And while that was partially true, there's a bigger reason why I don't want kids. James shifted in his chair, studying me. Go on. Here went nothing. I'm afraid I'm going to hurt my kid. There, I said it. The ugly truth was out. Becoming Ray and all the horrible things he represented was my biggest fear. Well, that and the fucking ghosts who haunted me. But that could wait for another day. James nodded his head as if it were a totally common fear. Did he not understand the implications? There was a very real possibility that a part of Ray was living inside me, just waiting for the right opportunity to turn me into the monster he had been. The last thing I wanted was to be like him, a killer, abusing my children the way he'd abused me. I'd seen, heard, and experienced things no human ever should, and now, as a result, I was afraid of my own goddamn self. Have you ever hurt a child, Jake? No, but I'm not around them very often. I did have my niece and nephew staying with me for a while, though. And how did that go? Fine, I didn't hurt them, if that's what you're asking. Have you ever wanted to hurt a child? Heat lapped up my ears as anger seeped through my pores. No, I growled. I wasn't sure why I was pissed at him when it was me who'd brought the subject up in the first place. What about Casey? Have you ever raised a hand to her? No, but sometimes I feel like my whole life is one big act. I try so hard to be normal, but I know I'm not. I feel like there are forces inside me that are just waiting for the right trigger. I was 13 when all this happened, so who's to say what influence Ray had on me, and when his evilness will present itself? Can I really be trusted? I mean, you saw what I did to your goddamn lamp. Obviously, based on my past, I have a propensity towards violence when I feel threatened or angry. Taking your anger out on an object is not the same as taking it out on a person. Right, but it's the escalation I'm worried about. There are no guarantees that I won't become progressively more violent down the road. I get what you're saying, and your concerns are valid, but statistics are on your side. Only a very small percentage of abused children become abusers themselves. That's not what I've heard. There's some research that suggests a higher causal link between the two, but there's very little evidence to support that theory. Research doesn't look at special circumstances. No, that's true, nor does it take the individual person into consideration. If Ray had raised you, I'd be more worried about the impact he had on your ethics. But as it was, you endured 1 month with the man. Not enough time, in my opinion, to change your moral codes. Oh, you'd be surprised what 1 month with Ray could do to a person. Typically, it resulted in a shallow grave, so yeah, this was a special circumstance. Then I supposed we have a place to start. If you thought the library was impressive, feast your eyes on this. Carol, the real estate agent, said dramatically as she swept her arms out in front of her like a fairy godmother conjuring up the space through her magical wand. A designer kitchen with white titanium granite countertops and Wolf Sub-Zero appliances, isn't it just to die for? Wow, Casey said, her eyes nearly as wide and full of wonder as the agent's. Look at that refrigerator and those cabinets. Oh, and that pot rack. Wait a minute. Is that a teppanyaki grill? Yes, it is, Carol answered proudly, as if she herself had been responsible for its placement in the kitchen island. As you can see, the owner spared no expense. No, that much was obvious. The place was a trophy house, and it was the fifth one we'd looked at today. I was honestly having trouble telling them apart. These stately mansions were too big and too fancy for my liking. I preferred smaller spaces. But as Casey had pointed out, we needed room to grow. What do you think, Jake? The agent asked, eagerly awaiting my approval. Yeah, I like it, I said with as much enthusiasm as I could muster. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough to fool either one of them. Is it the kitchen? Carol pinched her lips in a sign of distress. Do you prefer darker colors? Honestly? Like colors would be a deal-breaker in a goddamn mansion. No, anything works for me. The only thing I require in my kitchen is a smoke alarm. I use that as my cooking timer. The real estate agent humored me with a courtesy chuckle, but Casey looked anything but amused. Carol, can you excuse us for a minute? She grabbed my arm and steered me out of the kitchen without waiting for a reply. I didn't time it, but I'm pretty sure it was a 7-minute walk to the front door. Once outside, she asked, "What's going on with you?" "Nothing, I'm hungry." "You're hungry?" she asked, placing her hand on her ever-expanding waistline and taking on the expression of a pouty toddler. "Would you like me to go see if they have a juice box for you?" Although Casey appeared to be genuinely irritated with me, her sarcastic response struck a nerve, and I couldn't hold back the laughter. "Actually, that would be great, thanks." After a moment's hesitation, Casey recognized the humor in her words and joined me in a light-hearted chuckle. Taking my hand, she led me to the top step and we both sat down. "Talk to me. I can feel your frustration. What's going on?" "I don't know. According to my therapist, I don't like change, and this feels like a big one." "We don't have to get this place or any of the others we've seen today, but we do need to move. I love the townhouse, I really do, but security there is not great. And like it or not, you need more of it now than you did when you bought that place years ago. Since all the neighbors use the same manned entrance, it's fairly easy for outsiders, or just friends of the neighbors, to make unwelcome visits." "That almost never happens," I said, defending my bachelor pad. "But it has, and I'm not willing to risk our baby's security. Are you?" Well, when she put it that way, no. "So like I said, it doesn't have to be this house, but I need you to be an active participant in this. I don't want to make this decision on my own." "I know. I'll be good." "Thank you," she said, laying her head on my shoulder. We sat quietly for a moment, looking out over the expansive grounds. "This isn't the worst place ever," I conceded. "No," she laughed, "it's not. It's just, these places she's showing us are just showpieces. It doesn't feel like anyone actually lives in them. I guess I just pictured something more homey, you know, instead of a football field, just a lawn with a swing set. And would it be too much to ask for a white picket fence? I mean, come on." "In this neighborhood?" Casey asked, amusement clear in her voice. She turned toward me, taking my face in her hands, and peppered a half a dozen small kisses onto my lips. "What am I going to do with you?" "If you haven't figured that out by now, I feel sorry for you." She laughed and stood up, bringing me with her. "You know what? You're right. Let's go find us a home." James and I had been meeting 2 times a week for the past few months, and although it was slow going, I had worked my way through some important issues, mainly about fatherhood. We talked at length about the type of man Ray was, and I began to see with my own eyes that I was nothing like him. I'd almost forgotten the manipulations and the mind games he'd played on me, until James had brought those memories back to the surface. To a 13-year-old kid, Ray loomed larger than life, powerful beyond measure. A giant among men. But looking back now, I could see him for who he was, a small-minded man who was only as strong as I was weak. Using pain and fear as his weapons of choice, Ray swiftly and brutally shut down rebellion before it could take hold. Ray knew I was strong. He knew I would fight. So he tore my wings off before I could ever take flight. It took a person void of a conscience to callously and viciously destroy the lives of so many. Ray lacked the most basic of all human traits. Empathy. No, I wasn't like him at all, because despite the extended period of time I'd spent with the man, he'd never managed to beat the compassion out of me. And despite the drastic measures I'd been forced to take in order to save my own life, I crawled out of Ray's hell with my humanity intact. I knew then that I'd be okay, that my future children would be okay, and with those opening credits out of the way, James and I were able to return to the place we'd been the day I'd stormed out of his office the year before. "Tell me what life was like for you in the basement." On the surface, it didn't seem like a loaded question, but to this day, the secrets I kept and the burden I carried all went back to the answer to that question. "It was a torture all its own." James looked up from his legal pad, no doubt checking me for signs of stability, but also urging me with his eyes to continue. This was why I was here, to get it out of my head so I wasn't the only one carrying the weight. The memories poured from me then, as I told him about the dwindling food supply, the bugs, and the mattress I slept on that was covered in dried blood. I shared with him the fear I experienced every time the lights went out, shrouding me in darkness, and how Ray would sometimes throw me a bone in the form of a tea candle, which I would then watch obsessively until the flame eventually fizzled out and died, just like everything else in the tomb of death I was imprisoned in. But it wasn't the darkness, or the lack of food, or the hopelessness that caused me to flee from that final conversation I'd had with James. No. It was the seemingly harmless dripping of water that triggered my dramatic exit. Or, more importantly, what those leaking and creaking pipes meant to me while I waited for the end to come. It was alive. What was alive? James asked, appearing more than a little intrigued. The basement. The pipes were so loud and they dripped and screeched. Sometimes they made these groaning noises that sounded human-like. I started hearing things that weren't there, and seeing things, too. What were you seeing? Ray's other victims? James lifted his eyes, no doubt trying to determine whether I was messing with him. You were seeing ghosts? I shrugged because answering his question seemed redundant. I was the only survivor, so anyone I was seeing in that basement of horrors was most definitely dead. Did Ray tell you others died there? He didn't have to. The minute I was dumped into the basement, I knew it was a death chamber and that I'd never make it out alive. Flashes of memory flooded my senses, and I could feel my blood pressure begin to rise. Yes, there had been others, and yes, he had told me plenty about them. But it didn't take more than opening my eyes to know the fate of those who had come before me. I could see it on the blood-streaked walls, on the tally marks made on the frame of the bed, and in the box of souvenirs he'd kept with the belongings of each of his victims. Mine was already there, waiting to be filled. But it wasn't those victims that haunted me. As warped as it sounded, they were the lucky ones. When the nightmare ended for me, so did it end for them. Those were not the ones who haunted my dreams, nor were they the ones who appeared to me from the faulty plumbing. My ghosts were the forgotten ones, the victims even the police knew nothing about. In their late teens or early 20s, most had led hard lives before colliding head-on with Ray. Unlike me, they'd been tricked to their deaths, mostly through promises of drugs or money. They were Ray's first victims, the ones not killed in the basement or dug up around his home. There had been no justice for these guys. No closure, no funerals, and no tearful goodbyes. They were the forgotten ones, the ones left in unmarked graves never to be heard from again. These were the ghosts who haunted me in my sleep, the ones I'd been running from for half my life. I tried my best to explain all this to James, and when I was done, and he was staring at me like I was the apparition in this story, I articulated in a clear, even tone. I know this is going to sound crazy, but they spoke to me, James. They still speak to me. What do they say? I leaned in, struggling to find the words. They want me to set them free.
Chapter 22. Nesting. My parents made the trip with Sydney and Riley. Although I was 5 months pregnant, my mother didn't trust me to take it easy during our move to the new house, and if I was being honest with myself, neither did I. After the extreme fatigue and the up-and-down emotions of the first couple of months of my pregnancy, I was now 5 months along and feeling incredibly energetic. I'd taken to calling the baby Red Bull for the extra spring I now had in my step. And with the move and all, having my mojo back had been a major step forward. How are you feeling? My mother asked me for the 100th time. Happy. That's what I like to hear, she beamed. And you? I lowered the shirt I was fixing to the hanger and checked for her reaction. She seemed to be searching for an answer. Her well-being and that of the kids was always at the forefront of my mind, and I worried that she was hiding her true feelings behind a stoic exterior. I'm happy too, she replied. Are you? Mom took my hand. The sadness will always be there, and I've accepted that. But I have to be thankful every day for the kids. When I think about how much worse it could have been, her voice trailed off. Did you know they'd originally planned to bring the kids with them to the restaurant that night? Yes, I heard. So you understand why I also feel grateful. They could all be gone, but instead I have these wonderful kids to watch grow, and they make your dad and me feel young again. Riley's just such a joy. His energy and boyish exuberance is so much like Miles at the same age that sometimes I feel like I'm raising him all over again. And Sydney, Mom's eyes filled with tears. She's like a beautiful, wild, raging river. All that intensity and strength, but with so many obstacles in her way. How she handles the changing courses will determine the woman she will one day be. I've never felt more essential and needed. I have her future in my hands, and I won't fail her. I know you won't. I smiled warmly at my awesome mom. You've never failed any of us. And if I'm even half the mother you've been to me, my child will be so lucky.
I don't know, Casey. If you're only half the mother I am, then I might have to step in and whip you into shape. This is my grandchild we're talking about.
I tossed a shirt at her.
Okay, then I'll be better than you.
Well, now you're just making crazy talk, Mom said, grinning. You know what I can't wait for? Seeing Jake as a daddy. I stiffened a bit, knowing his reservations with fatherhood.
I know he'll be great, but he's not convinced yet.
I can see that. Jake takes time to adjust to new situations, but he'll come around because that man will do anything for you,
including having a baby when he doesn't really want one.
Mom waved it off.
Sometimes men don't know what they want. It's up to us to gently guide them in the right direction.
You mean the direction we want them to go? I corrected.
Yes, that's what I said. The right direction.
As the last of the moving trucks exited through the front gate, Jake and I walked out to the circular driveway and took a moment to appreciate our new home. Although no way near the small, quaint homestead Jake had imagined, it was a place we could both get behind. Fully enclosed behind a security fence and shrouded by full, majestic trees sat our fairy tale home with a multicolored slate roof and a stone tower with ivy growing up the side. The grounds weren't huge, at least not in Hollywood terms, but they provided for a nice amount of space for outdoor activities and included a pool, basketball court, and a little vegetable garden enclosed by, you guessed it, a white picket fence.
Do you love it as much as I do? I asked, wrapping my arms around his waist and laying my head against his chest.
I do. It feels like home. You know what I love best? He asked,
a smirk lifting up the corners of his lips.
Shut up, I laughed, playfully punching him in the gut.
We both knew what he was going to say. The guest house. The reason being that his mother-in-law would be in another building when she visited. That had been the running joke from the moment my parents had arrived, although it had been my mother, not Jake, who started the whole thing by insisting he'd bought the place specifically to keep her out of the main house. Jake had only run with the punchline. His jovial mood was a welcome change. There'd been a heaviness to his step for the past couple of weeks, and although he wouldn't tell me why, it was clear the therapy sessions were to blame. Sometimes I wondered if they were making him worse, not better. And it didn't help matters that he was so guarded. Jake was open and honest with me in all aspects of our marriage except one, the kidnapping. It was a topic that had always been off limits to me. Although I'd learned to live with the secret Jake carried from his past, that didn't mean I liked it.
You seem a little happier today.
Jake caught my eye for a quick moment before tipping his head and kissing my forehead.
Things will be better soon, I promise.
Really?
Perhaps there was too much surprise in my voice, but it was the first time he'd articulated an end to his melancholy.
Yes, really. I know I've been weird lately, but there are some things I'm working out right now. I can't say what they are yet, but as soon as I can talk about it, I promise to tell you.
Maybe I can help, I said, perking up.
Was there really an end in sight? His body tightened against me. I could feel his hesitation.
No. It's something I have to do on my own.
I just don't understand why I can't be a part of whatever it is you're doing.
I know, but you will understand. Soon, everyone will.
There was a strange foreboding in his words, but just as I was about to ask for clarification, Riley came barreling out the front door and flung himself full speed into Jake's arms.
Can we go in the pool now? You promised.
Did you help Grams pick up?
Yep, she said I could come get you.
Jake rumpled his hair.
Well, a promise is a promise.
I was still watching Jake, analyzing his body language for clues to this latest mystery. I had to assume that some things I'm working out right now explained why he'd been disappearing every day for hours on end.
Riley, can you give us a minute? I asked.
My nephew groaned, clearly impatient for his promised playmate. Jake leaned into me.
Not now, Case. There's nothing I can tell you yet. Give me a couple more days, and then you'll have the answers. Will you do that?
Do I have a choice? Jake shook his head.
No.
Chapter 23. Where They Live. Casey, I whispered, waking her from a deep sleep. Hey, I was wondering if you wanted to go for a drive with me. With her hair splayed out every which way and her eyes still sealed shut, Casey definitely didn't appear in any shape to keep me company. I nudged her again.
Babe, wake up. It's 7:30.
Go away, she mumbled, her limp hand trying to push me away.
It hurts when someone you love says mean things like it's time to wake up.
Smiling, I traced a strand of her hair and tucked it behind her ear.
I'll buy you a coffee if you come with me.
One eye emerged from under the pillow she'd placed over her face.
Starbucks?
Sure, wherever, but no meet and greets, strictly drive-through.
As if I want people seeing me like this. I look like I swallowed a blowfish.
You look beautiful. I commented on this statement, or some variation of it, daily. That was my standard reply. The only reply. She removed the pillow completely and raised her brow.
Why are you up so early? Can't sleep?
Something like that. In reality, I hadn't slept a wink, knowing what was coming. And it's 7:30, which is not early for most people. She pulled the sheet up over her head, hiding until I yanked it clear off her body.
Ah,
Casey groaned. Let's go. I'll give you 30 minutes to get yourself ready.
30 minutes? I'm not a magician, Jake.
Flinging the sheets off her body, Casey padded off to the bathroom, grumbling.
But I'll do what I can to not look like a troll.
I grinned at her cranky response. That's all I ask. Waiting for Casey, I stood in the hallway, gripping my keys in one hand and, in the other, a 12-year-old piece of paper featuring a list of cryptic directions pointing to a hidden location. Written from memory, it was a treasure map of sorts, but there would be no reward at this end of this path. I smoothed the worn paper with my fingers. The list was almost unreadable at this point, and of no significant value to me. I certainly didn't need it to get where I was going. Each line on this tattered parchment was burned in my memory for life. Truth be told, I only carried it with me now for emotional support. It was a reminder that I wasn't crazy, and that where I was going was more than just a place that lived in my nightmares. It was real, and as tangible as the paper in my hand. And after today, it would never be a secret again. Number 1. From Highway, take Poplin Road.
You're pulling in here?
Casey asked, scanning the surrounding area with a puzzled expression on her face.
Is this even a road?
Number 2. At 3.24 miles, turn right onto a dirt path. Not officially. It's a back way onto the property.
Whose property? Yours?
No, not mine. I expertly dodged the overgrown flowering bushes and the branches hanging so low off the trees that they smacked my windshield on multiple occasions. The dirt road I was driving along led to a sprawling farm about 20 miles north of Santa Barbara. This seemingly tranquil place was anything but, however. Its grounds held a terrible secret. I pulled up to a locked gate, put my Jeep in park, and hopped out.
What is this, Jake? Are we supposed to be here?
Isn't this private property? Number 3. Enter 8652 into the master lock. I hadn't been here in years, and it was possible that the lock had changed. If that were the case, I had a chain cutter that would get me through the gate. But to my surprise, there was no lock. All that was required was unclipping the gate and pushing it open. I walked back to my Jeep and continued driving. Number 4. Left at fork in dirt road. Casey's eyes were fixed on me now. She seemed to get that more was happening than just a leisurely afternoon drive. I pulled to a stop. Number 5. Old barn with metal shingles. Exiting the vehicle, I walked around to help Casey out and then stood for a moment, staring at the old structure and gathering my courage. Dragging a deep breath in, I walked to the barn, and, as I had in countless dreams, laid my hand against the tattered paneling. It was parched and unyielding, not like in my nightmares where the wood planks had a heartbeat and blood dripped from the cracks. "Does this place mean something to you?" Casey asked, gripping my arm. I heard her words but was too caught up in the moment to immediately answer. "Jake, what is this place? Why have you brought me here?" "You wanted to know my secrets." Casey squinted, blinking out the sun, as she examined the barn. "Do you remember our honeymoon, when you asked what I was having a nightmare about?"
"Yes, I remember. You said ghosts."
"This place here," I said, gesturing over the farm. "This is where they live."
"Live?"
she asked, shifting positions and rubbing her arms. I could see the goosebumps traveling up them as she spoke.
"What exactly are you showing me here?"
"My nightmare, Casey. I'm showing you my nightmare." She stared at me for the longest time, and I wasn't sure if I should continue or wait for her to catch up. Finally, she took a step away from both the barn and me. That was when I knew my words had sunk in.
"Did he take you here?"
Her voice shook as she spoke. "No, not me. Others. 5 others, to be exact, and this is where they died." Again, she took a step back, but now I could see real fear in her eyes. I grabbed Casey's arms to steady her. "Shit, this was stupid. I shouldn't have brought you here."
"No, I'm fine. Just shocked. Give me a second to process, okay?"
I nodded, assuming the wait would be long. But Casey was a decisive woman and had a whole barrage of questions ready for me in a matter of seconds.
"How long have you known? Did Ray tell you about them?
Are they buried in the barn?"
The last question was whispered, as if she didn't want the ghosts to hear. I reached into my pocket, pulled out the instructions, and placed them in her hand. Casey unfolded the paper, and I watched as she read the directions.
"Is this what I think it is?"
I nodded, touching the wall of the barn. "A map to them. The boys who died here."
"Where did you get this?"
"I wrote it, from memory, so I wouldn't forget."
"So Ray told you about this place then? About killing these boys?"
"Yes." She pointed at the map.
"How do you know he was telling you the truth? Maybe he lied to you. Maybe nothing is here at all."
"He wasn't lying, Casey. There was no reason for him to. As far as he was concerned, I was never leaving the basement alive. What did he care if I died holding his secrets?"
"But it doesn't make any sense. He killed all the others at the house. Why here?"
"These were his first victims. He didn't own that house when these guys were killed. Ray's father used to work on this ranch and brought him here as a kid. He knew every inch of this property, and knew that the land was so vast that no one would ever hear screams coming from this barn." She shook her head, either not yet willing to accept my explanation, or just unable to fully process it. Studying the list of directions in her hand once more, something seemed to click into place for her, and she asked,
"You followed this map before, haven't you?"
"Yes. I'd been here before, even sitting by their graves and apologizing for my cowardliness. Why couldn't I free them? What was this hold Ray had over me? Why did I insist on keeping his secrets? To lessen my guilt, I'd anonymously sent money to their families and prayed for their souls, but I'd never had the courage to do the one thing they'd asked of me. Until now. Today, I took back control." In that moment, a strange sensation crawled up my spine, raising bumps on my skin. They were here, crowding around, impatiently waiting. Had they known this was coming? Did they see me meeting with the FBI over the past few weeks and identifying them not only by name, but also through their missing person reports? Had they watched as search warrants were secured and a recovery plan was put in place? Did they know about the memorial funds I'd set up in their names to help their families with burial costs or the interview I'd scheduled for the following day to publicly acknowledge the discovery of their bodies? Did they experience time the same way we did? And if so, would they forgive me for taking so long to finally extract myself from Ray's iron grip? And most importantly, once I gave them their peace, would they finally grant me mine? Not trusting myself to speak, I answered Casey's question with a nod. Sensing my fragile state of being, she placed her hand on my chest and whispered,
"Why? Why didn't you just
tell someone?" I finished her sentence, shame licking up my heated skin. "I don't know why." We stood silently, her expression twisted in pain. For me. She deserved more, but the words were stuck in my throat. There was so much I needed to say to her, but that required a courage I wasn't sure I possessed.
"I'm sorry," I whispered.
Casey traced my face with her hands as a tear trailed down her cheek.
"Why are you sorry? There's no reason."
"There is. So many reasons. I'm so ashamed of myself, Case. I did this. I kept them here all these years. All I had to do was just tell someone. Anyone. They had lives. They had families. People who loved them. People who still don't know what happened to them. I was the only one who could save them, and I did nothing. I was such a fucking coward." Casey stepped even closer, hands still touching my face. "No one knows what it was like being you, how much you hurt. You did the best you could, and I will never look at you as a coward. You didn't put them here, Jake. This isn't your fault." I clutched Casey to me, my throat holding back something between a howl and a roar. Why me? The two words I swore I'd never say threatened to escape through clenched teeth. They were weak words, pathetic, really, and didn't deserve to be allowed passage. Yet my whole life could be summed up by that simple question. Out of everybody he could have chosen, why had Ray picked me? People speak of fate, the predetermined course of a person's life. But I'd always refused to believe I'd been placed on this earth solely to be the plaything for a demented killer, and so I worked to change my destiny, pouring my soul into music and making a name for myself outside of Ray's demented control. I reconnected with my family and made lifelong and lasting bonds, and most importantly, I opened my heart up to a beautiful woman and allowed myself to love. I did all those things to prove that fate didn't own me. But now I realized what a fool I'd been. I could change my destiny all I wanted, but I could never outrun my fate. Almost my whole life had been lived in his clutches. Ray's secrets were now my own, and his crimes had become my cross to bear. As if it weren't bad enough that he'd taken away my freedom and my innocence, Ray had also taken any chance I might have had at a peaceful life by forcing his memories on me with his boastful claims of death and destruction. I couldn't even close my eyes at night without the fear that his victims would visit me in my sleep. Jack, Anton, Wren, Wilson, and Felix. I knew their names and had seen their faces, both dead and alive. I knew the towns they'd lived in before Ray destroyed them, and who their families were, and what they'd been like in life. But I also knew what their last words had been, how they died, and where they were buried. I knew all this because Ray had bound me to them for all eternity. And when I'd come home, a tragic shell of myself, I'd tried to forget, blocking them from my memory for years, until one day they found their way through the barriers of my mind and infiltrated my dreams. They weren't ghosts at all, but living memories forced upon me by the man to whose fate I'd been forever linked. Yes, I should have told someone, but like Casey said, no one knew what it was like being me.
There was no handbook for me to study or any tried-and-true path I could follow. I had to find my way through hell on my own, and the mistakes I made had brought me here into the loving embrace of the woman who was willing to forgive my sins for no other reason than because she loved me and trusted that my heart was good. I promised you answers, Casey, and I'm ready to lay myself bare for you. But first, there's something I have to do. I'm not going to keep his secrets anymore. This ends today. I tipped my head in the direction of a row of SUVs driving toward us. They'd come in through the front gate at the main house, where they'd had to stop first to deliver the warrant. That's where I was supposed to meet them, too, but my need to follow the map was too strong. This was the last time I'd ever come here. After today, I would burn those morbid directions and never feel guilt for them again. In response to Casey's questioning stare, I replied, "They're with me." Casey stayed behind for the rest of my journey, although she did put up a good fight. I understood she wanted to be there for me, but this was something I needed to finish on my own. James, who'd arrived in one of the vehicles, remained at the barn with Casey. I didn't need him because the closer I got to the end, the stronger I felt. Number 6. Due south. A single boulder in the meadow with 5 marks carved in the base of the stone. I led the agents to the place on the map where the bodies could be found, and then stepped back out of the way and watched them work. Although there was some doubt amongst the FBI agents that anything would be found, I knew better. They were there, waiting. Soon their purgatory would come to an end, and then they would be free. It had taken me a long time to right the wrong, but now that I had, my hope was that there might just be a little bit of peace left over for me. My fate might have been tied to Ray's, but he didn't have any more rights to our story than I did. I could and would change the narrative. He didn't get to write the ending. I did. About an hour into the dig, sudden activity caught my attention. I knew it then. I could feel it. They'd been found. The tightness in my chest instantly eased as I breathed out a sigh of relief. My voice low, I spoke to them for the last time. "Rest in peace, brothers." They were finally going home. Later that night, Casey and I were nestled under blankets by the fire and sipping hot chocolate. It was one of those rare nights in Los Angeles where the temperatures had dipped down into the 30s. And yes, while I was aware that such a temperature was considered downright balmy in some parts of the country, here in Southern California, we were a bunch of ridiculous cold-weather wusses. "My toes are frozen solid," Casey complained, before proceeding to prove it to me by running her ice-cubed digits along my leg. "Stop it," I protested, flinching away from her. "You're going to give me frostbite." "Speaking of frostbite, I'm worried about the orange trees out back. Do you think they're going to freeze over and die?" I didn't have a lot of experience with Arctic temperatures, but it seemed logical to assume that tropical trees would be as pampered and fragile as we SoCal babies were. "Probably, yes." "Maybe you should go out right now and pick the ripe oranges so they don't all die and go to waste." "See, here's where I question your use of pronouns. It sounded like you wanted just me to go into the frigid outdoors to pick oranges for you." Casey laughed as she pulled the blanket higher. "Okay, you're right. Let the oranges die a glacial death. If it's a choice between juicy, colorful fruit and your ball sack, I'll pick the family jewels any day. No way is this baby going to be an only child." "No way do I want it to be." "Really?" she said, gazing up at me with stars in her eyes. "You want more?" "Well, let's get this one out of you first, but yeah, why wouldn't I?" "Well, you weren't real thrilled about this little one at first," Casey whispered as she pointed to her extended belly. "I don't want it to hear." Reaching my hands out, I cradled her stomach before bending down and kissing my baby. "I'm ready now." Casey ran her fingers through my hair, warming me with her loving gaze and gentle touch. "Ready for what, babe?" "For him. My son. I'm ready to be a father."
Chapter 24. Epilogue. cold, bright, sterile. My hand was locked in Jake's, and fear and excitement kept my body in a constant state of shivers. In just a few minutes, this would all be over, and I would be holding my baby. I closed my eyes and made a silent plea for a healthy child and a safe surgery. It was a scheduled C-section, but that didn't rule out complications. Apparently, the baby was too big to pass through my average-sized pelvis. Damn the McAllisters and their perfectly robust babies.
"I'm just about to cut the bag," the doctor announced.
I glanced at Jake, who seemed a bit paler than normal.
"You're not going to pass out on me, are you?" I asked.
"No, I'm fine," he answered, making a show of standing up straighter. He was staying strong for me, but I could imagine that seeing my stomach opened up wouldn't be the most pleasant sight for him.
"You're a trooper," I complimented him.
"Me?" he chuckled, nervously shifting from side to side.
"I'm not the one with hands in my stomach."
The doctor interrupted.
"All right, Casey, you're going to feel some tugging now as I pull the baby out."
Looking to my husband for support, I found comfort in the intensity of his stare. Jake tightened the grip on my hand. He was my protector, and I felt safe with him by my side.
"We're almost there," he whispered.
I bit down on my lower lip and nodded. This was it. Every struggle we'd been through culminated here, in this room, with our baby. Jake broke eye contact with me the minute a hollow scream emanated from behind the sterile screen.
"Listen to that talker," the doctor marveled. "Already screaming and not even born yet."
"That doesn't surprise me," Jake said, his voice sounding full of both amusement and pride. And then a real shriek, loud and insistent, echoed through the room. Mesmerized by the birth of his child, Jake completely forgot about me, but I wasn't the least bit offended. In fact, nothing made me happier than to see my husband fully vested in our baby. Once fearful he wouldn't be a good father, Jake had bravely worked through his issues and, in the process, had come to embrace his new role as a daddy. I studied his face for reaction. It was my only guide to what was happening on the sterile side of my body, and when I saw the smile light up his face, all my worries fell away.
"He's here,"
Jake said, with nothing but awe in those simple words.
"And he's perfect."
Tears of joy flooded my eyes as I waited for a glimpse of my new little man. Squeezing Jake's hand tighter, I felt the force of our connection. Every shared milestone became a memory we could look back on with love and pride. And this, the birth of our son, was a triumph that would last us a lifetime. A nurse carried the baby to me, rubbing his cheek up against mine. With his red, swollen eyes, splotchy skin, and screams so loud they ricocheted off the walls, our baby boy was pissed off and he wanted the world to know. I could only assume his current mood was the result of being kicked out of his nice, warm apartment, only to be manhandled by the landlord's hired help.
"It's okay, sweetie. You're all right," I soothed.
He instantly reacted to the sound of my voice.
"He knows you," Jake said, marveling at the connection we'd already made.
But I wasn't surprised at all. This wasn't our first meeting. Not really. I'd been talking to him nonstop since the day I found out I was pregnant, and mine wasn't the only voice he'd been hearing.
"Sing the song for him," I urged. "He loves it."
And so Jake softly crooned the chorus of a ballad he'd written specifically for his son, a song that had instantly pacified the rising soccer star who'd lived and kicked in my belly for the last 9 months. And just as he'd done countless times before, our baby listened. The screaming subsided, and both Jake and I gazed at his gorgeous face. He was a miracle created from our love, and the reason for the joy that filled our hearts on this momentous day.
"Okay, Mom and Dad, I'll bring him back soon. We just need to warm the little guy up."
The nurse smiled affectionately, looking between us, before whisking our son away.
"Casey, you've got a little more work to do," the doctor said. "Jake will follow the baby to the warmer while I deliver the placenta."
"Okay," I nodded, feeling a sudden chill race over my skin. Jake bent down and brushed his lips across my forehead.
"I'll be right over there."
He seemed just as hesitant to let go of my hand as I was with his.
"It's okay. I'll be fine. Keep an eye on our baby."
"You know I will."
And then Jake was gone. And the baby was gone. My only connection to either of them were the occasional updates Jake called out to me. I lay there for what seemed a very long time, alone on the cold table, dreaming of the moment I would be rejoined with the other half of my beating heart. I closed my eyes and waited.
Casey.
The doctor's voice boomed loud as he zapped me from my trance.
Everything went fine. We're going to transfer you to recovery, and then we'll get you all set up in a comfortable room. There's someone who wants to see you.
My droopy eyes snapped to attention when the nurse returned with Jake and our baby. Suddenly, the sterile room erupted with color, and my body warmed as if it were basking in the sun's rays. The moment he was placed in my arms, and those liquid blue eyes gazed upon me, it felt like the entire world had stopped spinning. He was mine. Ours. I wondered if my heart was big enough to hold all this new emotion.
"He's a big boy," she announced. 8 pounds, 11 ounces, and 22 inches long.
I flicked my eyes at Jake, rolling them dramatically. He grinned. It was our running joke, and I couldn't help but point out his culpability in the size issue. But I was only willing to spare a second away from the beauty that was in my arms.
Well, hello there, handsome. I'm your mom. I've been waiting a long time to finally meet you in person.
Jake cradled the back of the baby's neck and bent down to kiss his chubby little cheek.
Welcome to the world, little guy. It gets better, I promise.
I gazed adoringly at my loving husband and treasured son, feeling nothing but grateful for the life I'd been graced with. It wasn't that long ago my spirit had been broken in half by the loss of Miles, my beloved brother. At the time, I couldn't even imagine a moment as beautiful as this one would be waiting for me down the road. That was the truly wonderful part about life. It just kept moving along, bringing with it new and unexpected surprises for those willing to open their hearts and minds to love. I kissed the top of the baby's head, and then reached my hand up to run it along Jake's stubbled jaw. Bursting with happiness, I whispered to my men, "It doesn't get any better than this."
Chapter 25. Epilogue. My heart pumping wildly, I pushed through the double doors and into the sitting area where both my family and Casey's were awaiting the news. Although everyone had been aware of the gender months before his birth, I still felt the need to announce it to our loved ones. "It's a boy. Casey and baby are doing great."
"Oh, thank goodness," Linda said, blowing out a long, relieved breath.
She and my mother exchanged a quick hug. "How are you holding up?" my father asked, feigning concern. "I was a little queasy, I'm not going to lie," I answered, a smile spreading across my face. "But I stayed upright, so you lose."
"Yes," Kyle jumped from his chair. "Pay up, old man."
"Nope." My father shook his head, unwilling to accept defeat.
"First, I want confirmation from Casey."
"The lack of blood speaks for itself," Kyle protested. "You're just stalling." Yep, they'd bet on whether I'd pass out in the operating room, and my own father had been hoping for a full-on smelling salts revival.
"Scott, you need help,"
my mother said, waving him off before asking about the baby. I went on to share his impressive measurements, his fiery disposition, and just his overall perfection. Sydney flung her arms around my waist.
"When can I see the baby?"
"As soon as they move Casey into her room and she's feeling up to visitors, I'll come get you." Holding the baby in my arms, I rocked him back and forth, singing softly in his ear. Casey was on her way over from recovery, and the first thing I wanted her to see when she came through the door was me being the father she always knew I could be. From the very start of our relationship, Casey's faith in me had been absolute and unwavering, and that, in turn, had given me the strength to face my demons and free the guilt that had slowly been chipping away at my battered soul. Casey had given me the one thing money could never buy. Hope. Now I could see the path ahead, and it was a beautiful one, filled with love and laughter and babies. There was a time where I wouldn't have dared dream of such a life. I couldn't imagine there would ever be a white picket fence or a beautiful wife or a team of kids running around. Not for me. But I'd been wrong. Through all the trials I'd faced in life, through all the spilled blood and through all the hopeless tears, All it had taken to save me was love of a patient woman. The baby jerked in my arms as the peaceful little face I'd been gazing upon shifted without warning. Suddenly, my son was seized by a nightmare of his own making. I watched in fascination as his lips pouted and his forehead wrinkled in consternation. What perils could he possibly have faced in his very short existence? I could see, maybe, if he'd had a rough passage through the birth canal, or had a cord wrapped around his neck, but as it was, he'd had a fairly cushy entrance into the world. "What do you have to be scared of, little guy?" Running my fingers along his newborn skin and speaking in soft, soothing tones, I tried to lessen the frightening effects for him. No one asked for nightmares to invade their slumber, and it seemed especially unfair for one so young to suffer. "You're safe. I won't ever let anything happen to you." I wiggled my finger into his palm, and the baby gripped it tightly, as if he'd heard my solemn promise and was asking to shake on it. I wavered a moment, wondering how I could guarantee him safe passage in a world filled with dangers, both big and small. And did I really want to keep him safe from all harm? How would he grow into a strong, confident man if he never experienced real life? As tempting as it was to package him up in bubble wrap and send him on his way, I couldn't do that to my child. Just because my life had been filled with fright didn't mean he had to live his in fear. My son deserved the chance to make his own mistakes and earn his own scrapes and bruises. I wanted him to be a child free from worry, and for that to happen, I had to let him live. "Within reason," I conceded. My son opened his eyes at the sound of my voice, and for one magical moment we connected. I was his dad, and if I played my cards right, he'd love me for the rest of my life. My fear of fatherhood had been misguided from the start. Kids didn't care what challenges you'd faced or what poor decisions you'd made. They were clean slates, open books, ready and willing to be written in. All they needed was love and guidance with a splash of fun, in order to grow into the people they would one day be. And those were things that, without reservation, I knew I could provide. And yes, one day we'd have that tough discussion and I would tell him my story because, just like with Sydney, if I didn't, someone else would. But I wasn't worried. This boy came from the sturdiest of stock. He was a Caldwell and a McAllister. It didn't get more resilient than that. Besides, I no longer felt the need to hide from my past. Every step I'd taken in my life had led me here, to this chair, cradling my newborn son in my arms. Casey was rolled into the room a few minutes later, sitting up and looking strong and healthy, wearing a smile on her face that stretched from ear to ear. "Gimme, gimme, gimme," she said, reaching for her baby. "One more minute, Mama," a nurse said, as she and another transferred Casey from the rolling bed into the plush bedding of her very own 5-star baby birthing suite. Once Casey was situated, I stood, carefully, and brought him to her side. "He's so beautiful, Casey," I said, kissing his head, which was spattered with an impressive showing of dusty blonde hair. "Can you believe he's ours?" Gently, I lay him in her arms. The moment they touched, I could feel their connection, and I watched in awe as the baby responded to her. He knew her, and my God, I think he already loved her. It was a powerful bond, mother and son. My own had given me life, more than once, but never had I been so grateful for her until just this moment when I witnessed my own son receiving the same gift I'd been given, that of a loving, protective mother. "You don't know it yet," I said to my boy, still running my fingers over his wispy locks. "But you just won the mom lottery." "And you don't know it yet," Casey cooed, "but your daddy's a famous rock star, and you're going to have the coolest damn life." My voice was still in baby talk mode when I added, "But only if you're not named Bart, which is what your mommy wants to name you. Doesn't that suck?" "Jake, you know how I feel about the name," she said, sounding entirely serious, but there was no hiding that smile of hers. "Besides, I already signed the birth certificate." My eyes bugged out of their sockets before I came to my senses. I had yet to see this birth certificate she spoke of, so I was fairly certain she was just punking me.
Casey's nose crinkled up as she laughed at my reaction. I'm kidding. How about this? I have a compromise for you. If I let you pick the boy names, can I name any future girls?